Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
Jake, we saw the Usos, the longest reigning tag champs, in an impromptu tag match on Raw, lose relatively clean to Kevin Owens and Seth Rollins, a makeshift tag team. What was your reaction to that outcome? Why do you think they did that?
I've seen some conversation about this immediately on social media as well. My first reaction was, well, I mean, if they run through the entire roster through the course of a 3-hour show and then they win in the main event, it kind of makes everybody on Raw look like chumps. So I guess you were in the position of, well, you know, do the tag champs lose a non-title match, or do you completely, make half of your Raw roster look terrible that they weren't able to catch up to the Usos throughout the course of the night? And so it didn't bother me that much. I think it was fine with the way the show was set up. The Usos looked plenty strong throughout the night.
Yeah, I wasn't bothered by it, but I was intrigued by it. And I think it was Kevin Patrick who said that Roman Reigns will not be pleased with this. So I am wondering if this is in part done because of a story they're telling with the Bloodline, and that Roman Reigns ultimately is going to – that there's going to be ramifications for the Usos losing. Perhaps some – I'm trying to replay kind of all the chaos near the end, but could he blame Solo Sikoa for not – making sure that this didn't happen?
I made a concerted effort not to watch or pay attention to any of the spoilers that came out of the SmackDown tapings from last week. So I don't know if this plays into a story that's going to continue on Friday's show. Cause you know, Roman was in the building last Friday when they taped it. And so clearly they've probably already got some stuff in the can that plays on, you know, what happened on tonight's show and, Paul Heyman and Roman taping something to play at the beginning of this show obviously was a part of that as well, because it looked like the same set that they were on for the SmackDown backstage segments they did with the Bloodline last week. And so, I think they're probably playing into the idea that, you know, the Bloodline has a KO problem and the Usos couldn't put them away in a tag team match. And, you know, the antics from earlier on in the show, you know, caused some of the other Raw talent to come down and take out Solo Sikoa, kind of taking away the insurance policy. And then you had Sami Zayn sort of vapor lock in the presence of Kevin Owens at the end of the show. And I think all that will eventually, you know, play into Roman being very upset on Friday's SmackDown. So it's definitely in service of a story. And so I guess before I overreact to it, I guess I'll wait to see how it plays out on Friday.
Yeah, and that's the thing. If they tape something backstage that may or may not have aired at the tapings, and I, like you, have avoided the spoilers, because unless something so massive happens we need to know, I'd prefer not to know what's going to happen on a TV show I'm going to watch for enjoyment. We'll see. But the match was good. I really liked that Kevin Owens and Seth hung out backstage after deciding to team together in this match and talked about their past. It's an attention to detail that seems to follow Kevin Owens around. So my hunch is he has a say in this, making sure that there is an explanation that takes into, or not, I shouldn't say explanation, but just that the context of anything he does includes, whenever feasible, an acknowledgement of some history that might seem contradictory to the choices he's making or not taking into account the past. And I thought that was a good segment. And I thought it was great when KO said, I'm 98% sure it was you. And Seth said, oh, so 2% chance you're wrong. He goes, no, it's 100%. I just don't want to hurt your feelings. Multiple things in that segment were fun. And we haven't seen them play off each other in a while. So for a variety of reasons, I like that.
Yeah, and I hope that's something that continues into the future. And I hope it expands beyond Kevin Owens. The Vince McMahon era of, you know, I guess the last, I don't know, 5 or 10 years was marked by a pretty large increase in the amount of things that the audience and all the wrestlers on screen were just expected to forget ever happened. And I hope they continue to have Kevin Owens kind of play wrestling historian and remember things that he was involved in previously. They did it the previous week with him and Elias, and then they had a similar segment tonight that was a lot of fun with Seth Rollins. And I think it's good that, you know, wrestlers remember angles and matches that they were a part of previously, and the audience is just supposed to forget that those things ever happened in the first place. And even if it makes for some awkward recollections, it's better than just pretending it never happened.
Yep. All right. Match quality was good with the Usos. The opponents were strong. The crowd heat picked up for this match. There was a lot going on, and it felt like a when Raw was over, I think because of the surprise of the finish, the quality of the match, and then everybody showing up, including there's so many moving parts because you had Austin Theory knocking out Seth at ringside, which actually didn't play into the finish, which I actually love because it looked like, that's going to be the reason they lose, and it wasn't. And I think you want to kind of make sure people don't want everything that happens leading up to a finish to be predictable, and they've gotten better even with distraction finishes, not necessarily leading to a finish anymore, so that you can't assume that. And then you had the OC, or at least Anderson and Gallus, coming out to try to get revenge from earlier in the night. And so, I thought it was an exciting main event, high energy. It felt like it had a really big dose of star power, and I thought it was a fitting end to a good end to Raw that would leave some people pleased with their choice to watch. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, other than maybe the, the Gallows and Anderson and Alpha Academy match and the Loomis and Miz ladder match, which seemed to completely lose the crowd. I think the show was far more good than bad. And, the main event was certainly a part of that, but I think the third hour was much better than it's been in recent weeks, in my opinion, at least.
Yeah, and I mean, it helps to have the matches that they had, Becky and Bailey, which we'll get into probably in the next segment, and then just a lot of Seth Rollins on the mic with Austin Theory. And really just three major segments. There wasn't a ton of filler in that third hour. So I'm with you on that. And I have not been a proponent of waving the white flag in the third hour. It becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you say, well, we always have fewer viewers in the third hour, so let's front load everything. It happens with Rampage with AEW. Well, we're going to have fewer viewers. It's a bad time slot, so let's not put major stuff on there. And while there's something to be said for that, you also condition your audience to look at that third hour not essential. And I think you need to have third hours like this that show the crowd, show the audience that, this show is 3 hours, like it or not, and we don't just phone in that third hour because fewer people watch.
Definitely. And I think the key to the success of having three, somewhat strong hours of Raw, I don't think it's possible to hit home run after home run every week, most likely. But, they need to do what they started doing tonight. They're adding a second women's program in Becky and Bailey underneath the women's championship feud. They added Bronson Reed back into the equation, which is a boost for the mid-card, which I think is the actual key to making a three-hour television show work. You need strong mid-card programs that people can invest in so that, middle 30 to 45 minutes of the show or that low part in the third hour that seems to happen just about every week isn't quite as low. And so I think they're starting to put some pieces back on the board that will help with that, but it's going to take time because they have so many acts that just still feel kind of cold right now.
Yep. All right, very good. Well, let's pause and introduce ourselves and introduce the show, and then we'll move on to phone calls and emails and more topics from this episode of Raw. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show, I should say, for Monday, December 19th, 2022. And I'm Wade Keller, the host of the program, the editor, publisher, and founder of the long-running Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter, which predated our website, pwtorch.com, which predated our podcasting, which we've been doing for, nearly 20 years now. We did podcasts before podcasting was even a word for our members called audio shows back then. We actually, by the way, for our VIP members, run our 18 years ago shows, our VIP shows, for our members on our VIP podcast feed. And I know I'm fascinated when I listen back to these old shows. Randy Savage has made an appearance on a TNA pay-per-view, and that's coming up in the vault over the next week. We're going to have some shows on that. The Wade Keller hotlines recently in our vault, going back to December 2004, included tons of details on that Rene Dupree, Bob Holly incident at the house show where Holly beat him up. Holly's written about it and talked about it since then. We also had an in-depth review of the ECW DVD with Bruce Mitchell. And, well, I could go on. It's cool stuff. So many perks and when you go VIP, and one of them is just how long we've been doing podcasting and the fascinating insider reports and roundtable conversations after pay-per-views that we've been having going on two decades. So go VIP. You can get all our archives on demand, but we also just kind of drop them in on our feed for the ease of listening on the 18 years ago, roughly anniversary dates of those shows. PWTorch.com/goVIP to find out more and try VIP membership. It's maybe a nice gift for yourself for 2023. $99 gets you a whole year of access to everything, all our new content and all of our archives, ad-free versions of this show and our other free shows, and then also access to our ad-free website. PWTorch.com/goVIP, splurge and go VIP. All right, the other voice you hear on the show so far is Jake Barnett from ProWrestling.net and often a podcast partner of Jason Powell over at ProWrestling.net. Jake, welcome back to the co-host chair.
Always happy to be here, Wade. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you on the show. Tell people more now about what you do for ProWrestling.net, how they can read and hear more from you when you're not here with me on one of our shows.
Yeah, well, as you mentioned, I record .NET Weekly, which is the flagship podcast with Jason Powell over at ProWrestling.net that usually comes out on Thursdays. I also do a weekly television report. Most of the time it's AEW Dynamite. Some weeks it's SmackDown, depending on scheduling. And then I also appear with Jason on all of the member-exclusive pay-per-view audio recaps for both WWE and AEW pay-per-views. And you can find me on Twitter at BarnettJake with two T's, and you can catch all of that member information for ProWrestling.net at and now I'm forgetting the link. What a terrible
PW
podcast.
PWmembership.
PWmembership.net. Man,
I remember that. Yes, I do. Yep, PWmembership.net. There we are. Cool. All right. Well, let's get back to talking about tonight's Raw, and that will include callers, and that could be you if you're listening to our live stream. Our live stream, by the way, is available at WadeKellerPostShow.com. You can navigate to the link. We have a direct link to the stream that we post on Twitter at PWTorch right around the time Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown end each week, and also at PWTorch.com in my TV reports at the top and bottom. There's a link to our live stream along with our phone number and email address if you want to stream the show live or call in and listen or participate. All those options are there for you, and it is a single click away. So we encourage you to join us live if it fits your schedule. Otherwise, like most people, you can just download the show and listen later. However, email is a way to participate even if you can't call into our live stream. So keep that in mind when you are watching Raw, Dynamite, or SmackDown. That Wade Keller podcast at pwtorch.com is a way for you to ask a question or rant or throw out a compliment or whatever contribution you want to make to the show. All right. So got calls to get to, emails to get to, and a lot more from Raw. So let's get to it. We will begin with – did I give out the phone number? No, I'm doubting myself. I don't think I did. If you're live streaming the show, 347-215-8558 and push 1. That's 347-215-8558 and push 1. If you call in, again, please do push 1. If you've already called in and as the show progresses, you want to join the conversation, you can push 1. And again, that'll flag you on the switchboard so we know you want to be on the show. All right. Up first is William in San Diego. William, thanks for calling. What's in your mind about Raw tonight?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I thought the show was pretty good tonight, aside from maybe the ladder match, but I'll get to that later.
yeah.
I want to talk about the crowd reaction in a general sense. You know, wanted to get your thoughts because I felt like tonight was a better effort than most recent weeks. And you know, we've seen in recent weeks kind of this crowd reaction where not a lot of engagement, not a lot of heat or anything. But yeah, I feel like they've made more of an effort tonight. And I don't know, is it just a case of, you know, sometimes you just don't get the crowd you want, or is there something more they could have done? Because, I mean, I feel like short of a surprise Roman Reigns in-person appearance or a Brock Lesnar appearance, something like that, I think they, you know, they did pretty good by that crowd with the bloodline running around, creating chaos, the Becky and Bayley match, the, you know, the tag team main event. I feel like they got a lot, and for the most part, it seemed like they were really too much into the show.
Jake, what's your take on the crowd tonight and the crowd in general for Raw or WWE in general these days?
It really seems to depend heavily week to week. I think SmackDown last week had a better crowd than Raw this week, and I think a lot of it has to do with the type of crowd that you're getting. And I think the typical WWE crowd, at least in my experience when in attendance, is far less hardcore wrestling in general than your average, say, Dynamite audience. You know, and they're far less likely to be completely clued into everything and glued to the product. And so if you're not presenting them with a lot of immediate recognizable star power, I think they tend to be quieter than you might expect. It seems to improve for, like, the PLEs or the pay-per-view events. They tend to get better crowds for those that are slightly more plugged into the show. But your average, you know, Raw or SmackDown audience, particularly in sort of sleepier towns like Des Moines, I don't think you're going to find it to be particularly loud or plugged-in crowd. So I don't get overly concerned about that kind of stuff, unless the crowds are really small and they're quiet. But it seemed like the building was mostly full here, and when the major stars were on screen, I think the reaction was what you would expect. They seemed to be a lot more lively when the major matches were happening.
The ladder match was not electric. I don't want to steal your thunder, William, but you brought up, you know, the lack of crowd heat. What is I'll just throw this to Jake first, and then William, you can kind of chime in with your thoughts. But is the Gargano Dexter thing working less on Raw than it did in NXT? Is there a missing ingredient? Do you not agree with the premise? Did we not really get a test of whether it was working in NXT? Is it more of just sort of a pet project of Paul Levesque or others, and it just doesn't really have a chance to resonate? Just kind of your take on that, because it did seem like, yes, Miz in a ladder match is not going to be the ladder match it's not going to be off the charts in terms of chances taken. Miz is one of Miz's top favorite things to brag about. Isn't match quality. It's not drawing power. It's just how healthy and available he always makes sure he is. And I don't think he wants a ladder match to ruin that. Just kind of your thoughts on the crowd reaction and the Dexter Gargano as babyfaces aspect of this in general.
I haven't found Johnny Gargano to be particularly engaging as in this particular babyface character. He's come across as more whiny and annoying than somebody that you want to get behind. And I think that's, you know, had an effect on the overall story. The Miz certainly hasn't been at his best for quite a while now. He's just sort of a pest mid-card heel that spends most of his time losing or being embarrassed or, having people comment on the size of his testicles or whatever they have going on for his gimmick of the month. And I think Dexter Lumis is one of those things that worked in the lab in NXT because, you know, you're in front of a familiar audience all the time and they're sort of in on all of the inside jokes and whatnot. But in large doses in front of the mainstream audience, I think it's just kind of flat because you saw it worked more often earlier on in this feud when you were only seeing him doing kind of clever backstage segments or appearing from under the ring and disappearing with The Miz. But the more you place him in front of these crowds in these long matches, I think, you know, this ladder match went nearly 20 minutes inexplicably. It certainly doesn't, the joke doesn't last that long at that point. And I think that's really where we're at. This feud is overexposed. None of the characters are really over. And I think it's time to go back to the drawing board with it.
Yeah, I cannot figure out what's different about Gargano, but I just don't find him likable I find his demeanor off-putting. And I don't know if maybe when he went heel, he just had so much fun being a heel that he kind of is unable to shed the mannerisms. But the guy is who's I'm watching as Johnny Gargano now is not the instantly likable, affable underdog of, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. It seems like this remnants of the guy who was trying to be obnoxious. And he hasn't adjusted, you know. I think that's playing into it. But they just haven't told the Dexter story very well either. I mean, he's this weirdo who showed up, and there's nothing special about him in the ring. And I think there needs to be more to it than he's, you know, Johnny Gargano's pet or friend or I don't know, whatever the backstory is on them. William, over to you for your thoughts.
Yeah, I think you may have answered one of my questions, but I'll ask it real quick anyway, so maybe you have something to add there. But because I never watched NXT during those days of, The Way or whatever. And it just seems that Johnny Gargano came in. He had like a hot mission statement, a hot reaction when he first came in, and then they added him to the storyline with The Miz and Dexter Lumis, and it seems like, in a way, Dexter is kind of bringing him down. It sounds harsh, but my question is there any upside to Dexter, or is he only there just bringing Gargano down? Like, if we took out Gargano out of the equation, would Dexter be able to survive on his own?
I don't know if I'm more than average, but I'm a guarded proponent of Dexter's character because it's so different and he plays the part so well. But that said, I think they just thought, a surefire way to get Dexter and Gargano over his baby faces was put him opposite of Miz. And because Miz is, you know, just this masterful heel at WWE style heat, and who's going to cheer Miz against anyone? And I don't think it's happened. So, and I'm not blaming Miz. I'm blaming especially just the role Gargano has played and what he was written to do. And just, I think Gargano just ended up being more obnoxious. So, and I think that actually, I think that affected Dexter more than just the Dexter character not having a chance to succeed. I just think the Miz Gargano thing just isn't the dynamic that they were hoping for. Jake, what do you think about Dexter overall?
Well, I think this feud has been exceptionally poorly written. I mean, you look back at why Gargano got involved in the first place, and it's because for some reason he decided to play private investigator and uncover all of, you know, this plot line about The Miz bringing in Dexter to pay him off to do certain things, and then he didn't come up with the money, and it's just been extremely convoluted. And I don't think it's helped Dexter in any way. You know, he was more entertaining when his motives were a little less clear. And now you've had a character who hasn't been particularly charming over-explaining his motives to the point where I don't care about them anymore. And so you have this ostensibly a ripoff of, you know, the Dexter television show, a serial killer for good, so to speak, as bizarre as it sounds on premise, being constantly explained away by the world's most annoying narrator. And now, neither of them seem particularly likable. And the Miz has just become sort of an accessory to this whole thing. He's just there to give his goofy facial expressions, you know, as the story is happening around him. It's not really happening to him anymore. And so I think it's something they have to abandon.
Yeah, I'm curious what's next for Gargano, what's next for Dexter, how committed they are to those two as a duo, and if they can find heels to work against them, or if the plan is if they have a longer-term story arc for Gargano and Dexter that involves one or both of them turning heel and changing up the dynamic. Those two as a baby face, if they think, oh, they're a baby face team and Miz is going to help put them on the right course, and then we're going to, you know, feud them with Otis and Gable, or I'm trying to think of some heel team that might work for them. I don't know. It might be time to rethink it, but maybe it's just Maybe it's just they just need to just shift away from the Miz feud and give them a chance to kind of regroup. So I'm curious where they go with it, and if they're kind of getting if they're reading the room, like I think they ought to be in terms of how well this is working. William, back to you.
Yeah, I want to talk about the Bayley and Becky match. Some general thoughts and then a question. I thought the match was pretty good. I really liked the promo from Becky before the match, and specifically her line about, if you're going to stab me in the back, at least have the decency to hold it like yourself or something like that. I thought that was good. And, I just think Becky overall, she looked really good out there. She looked like a star. Not a big fan of the scree finish. Even if, they were trying to protect Becky, I feel like damage control has been damaged a lot, in recent weeks and months. And they had a 3-on-1 advantage over Bianca in a ladder match, and even then they couldn't get the job done. And, now you have Becky returning, and it's her first singles match since in a long time as a babyface. And they have her lose to Bayley in that way. Not really a big fan. I think you should be trying to protect her a little bit more. What do you guys think about that?
Jake, go first.
I think, Becky essentially laid out her own loss in the promo before the match because, she essentially begged Bayley to let, EO and Dakota stay in the back so they could settle this one-on-one. So, if Becky was going to lose, she wanted it to be to Bayley one-on-one rather than having some sort of cheap bout finish. And I think that established the fact that, Bayley made her entrance directly after that promo, and there she was with her friends coming out with her. And so, Becky was proved right that Bayley doesn't have the confidence in herself to face her one-on-one. And then they took the cop-out finish I think she hit her with the TV monitor and then the rose plant and picked up the win. So I'm assuming this is just setting up a rematch sometime in January before the Rumble so they can settle this in some sort of stipulation main event of Raw, which I think is fine. I don't know how you could have Bayley lose here and keep much, if at all, any of her credibility because she's come across rather poorly since her return. And not all of that is her fault. It's clear that they wanted Becky involved in this from the beginning at SummerSlam, and the unexpected injury derailed a lot of their plans. And now they're coming back to it, having done a lot of damage to Bayley in the process. And so hopefully they can use Becky, and maybe they have to get somebody else involved with Becky to counter EO and Dakota. But it's definitely something that I think is just a little bit of it was out of their hands. The match was fine. The promo was fine. The finish was a little bit screwy, but I really don't know how else you get to where they want to go other than having Becky lose here. She had to give Bayley a little bit of that credibility back heading into what I think will be a pretty hot rematch if they can set it up properly.
Yeah, there's that balance of that consideration. Is Bayley worth giving a boost to if we have to sacrifice this veneer of Becky Lynch not losing very often, being a top star? And we kind of thought with the Usos later, and if it serves a purpose, anybody losing makes sense, but you want it to seem like a big deal. Now, Bayley's enough of a star historically, and Becky talked about that in her promo. We go way back, and we've both done things we're proud of. We've both done things we're not proud of, but I do them alone, and you do them with cohorts. And, the implication being that makes Becky better, and I'm worth cheering. They cover the background, and I think by reminding people of the background, it gave a little boost to Bayley. Just Becky talking about Bayley as a peer and a contemporary of hers made losing to Bayley seem like it's within the realm of possibility, especially with all the shenanigans. So I don't think Becky loses a lot. Maybe in a meta sense, she seems less protected. But trying to get something more out of Bayley, I think, is key right now. And this should light a spark with Becky. And as you said, Jake, Becky basically gave an excuse ahead of time for losing by saying, I want to face you. I want to beat the best Bayley alone, not the one who relies on help. So she gave herself almost a preemptive excuse for the loss. William, back to you.
Yeah, one final topic, and I'll let you get to other callers and emailers. Going back to the ladder match, I think you already kind of touched on the Bronson Reed debut, but I don't know. I thought, I mean, I get that they still need to add a lot of people because, you know, they obviously let a lot of people go before Vincent Van stepped down. But I feel like this one might have been the one that was one too many for me personally. And I think maybe I'm just tired with the formula of, you know, a surprise out of nowhere debut rather than if we were going to do more debuts, I maybe want them to be more, you know, like vignettes or video packages or like coming soon, that kind of stuff. I feel like it's been nothing
yeah.
but, you know, surprise debut or return. And yeah, this one, I kind of rolled my eyes and, you know, as someone, like I mentioned, that hasn't watched NXT in ages, doesn't really know much about Bronson Reed, it kind of, you know, sent me off in a wrong start with him.
I'm going to read a related email, William, to what you just brought up, and then I'll throw it to Jake for thoughts. Matt from South Carolina said, I know at some point, either tonight or another show, someone will comment about Triple H's over-reliance on bringing people back. I don't agree. He has 5 hours of TV to fill every single week. There's plenty of time to go around. And now it seems like they are creating more storylines for the people they have. I think a big reason for that is now there just isn't one guy making all the decisions. I'd much rather have 10 different storylines going on instead of only 3 that are given any creative thought. So I introduced that into the conversation. And Jake, get your thoughts on, you know, the as Matt talked about and Williams bringing up, a lot of new people being dropped in to add some depth, but it does feel like they're just, you know, all these Triple H favorites who got cut that maybe, you know, Paul Levesque disagreed with at the time, but wasn't in the power to stop.
Yeah, I mean, I don't necessarily disagree with bringing some of these folks back. I guess it would have been nice if he would have been able to make good on some of, you know, the previous statements that have been made over the years about having a plan for people once they arrive on the show, because it does seem like people return and then they end up just being in the shuffle and there's no definitive, you know, 2-3-6 month plan for anybody. It's just, you know, how does the first program work, and then we pivot based on whether or not they're able to get over. And so I guess I would say I've been a bit underwhelmed by the performance of some of the returning wrestlers. Like I don't feel like, you know, when they showed, a lot of them, when they showed up, they weren't immediately over, you know, like much like Bronson Reed, they didn't get that immediate reaction where people were excited and surprised to see them. And then the follow-up hasn't really raised the profile of many of them either. And so I think it's not that I disagree with the premise that they needed more talent to fill out the 5 or 7 hours of TV that they have every week. It's just that the creative hasn't really inspired me to be more invested in much of them. And so I think there's plenty to be critical of, even if the premise that they were, you know, they were depleted on talent and needed more of it, is actually true.
William brought up just doing more vignettes to introduce them and kind of shaking up, shaking up the idea, shaking up the way that these wrestlers are brought back and not just having it be run-ins for pops, especially when the pops aren't that good. That said, I mean, Bronson Reed coming in and aligning with Miz and that sort of being the escape hatch from the ladder match finish, especially if those two are paired together, it can freshen up Miz. And I'm for that more than more of, say, John Morrison, Johnny Nitro, Johnny whoever, Johnny Impact. You know, so, I mean, a new dynamic for Miz can work out if that's where they're heading. Anything else you want to add on that, Jake? And then I'll throw it back to William.
No, I think the main criticism, and I think it's one that most people that I converse with on a regular basis agree with, is that, you know, the creative output from Triple H has had its strengths and it's had its obvious downsides. And I think managing this huge influx of talent has been a challenge for the creative team. And it's not one that I think is impossible for them to overcome, But I do think they have quite a few pieces in the wrong places, and maybe, you know, once they get through this difficult, you know, I think it's an 8-week period between PLEs, and have a chance to do a bit of a reset, that it'll look a bit better, especially if they're able to do maybe a draft or something along those lines post WrestleMania to make some fresh matchups.
All right, very good. I'll throw back to William for any closing thoughts if you have any.
Yeah, that's all I had. Thank you guys for taking the call. Have a good week and a happy holidays in case I don't call on Friday.
Okay, excellent. Thanks, William. Good to hear from you. Happy holidays to you. All right, let's head over to Brad in Florida next. Brad, thanks for calling. What's in your mind tonight?
Hey, Wade. Hey, Jake. How you guys doing? Thanks for taking the call really quick.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, a couple things about tonight's show. You know, first of all, I always love when Seth Rollins brings up Roman. It makes me think that maybe they're planting seeds for that to happen down the line again. I mean, obviously it's not in the immediate, but, I mean, do you guys see that coming down the pipeline again? Like, obviously, like, there is unfinished business there, and every time Seth is in the ring doing some sort of promo, and it happens, you know, once every 2 months or something like that, but he will bring up Roman, and he did tonight, you know, the tribal chief and this and that. I mean, to me, that's the most exciting matchup that can possibly happen. And it was a year ago, obviously, when Seth came out at SmackDown and, you know, they ended up having that match at the Royal Rumble. But when Pierce, I guess, picked him as the opponent, do you see this on the somewhat near horizon at all, or is it just impossible to tell?
Jake, first of all, I'll say I like Seth bringing it up because of exactly what you're saying, Brad. It creates anticipation for a match. It plants a seed for whenever they want to do it. I'm not convinced they know when they're going to do it or that they think it's on the near horizon. I won't rule it out, but I think it's just a logical thing to do if you're Seth and he's a former Shield member and Roman's a top guy in SmackDown and de facto you're kind of the top guy on Raw and you've turned babyface recently or, you know, sort of shifted or eased into the babyface role. So I'll say too, I don't think that's my most anticipated matchup in WWE. Cause it just doesn't feel super fresh to me, even with Seth and Roman both growing and changing since the Shield. So Jake, kind of want to get your thoughts on the timing of it, the approach of just having Seth do it. And also just, is this, you know, at tide or near the top of your most anticipated potential WWE matchups at this point?
Well, I think it is probably near the top. It's one of the situations where the last title match they had together, you know, was inconclusive. And Roman has been, you know, the undisputed champion now. You know, it'll be a year at WrestleMania. And so I assume they'll get back to it, but I almost think it'll have to be after Roman drops the championship because I don't think Seth is going to be the guy that defeats Roman. But I do think their feud is personal and intense enough that it would actually benefit from being away from the Undisputed or Universal Championship because it adds a lot more freedom about how they approach it creatively. And it creates a lot more mystery about what the outcome of that match would be at that point. And so I would say, you know, depending on when you think Roman's title reign is going to end, whether you think it's at WrestleMania or whether it's at SummerSlam or even further down the road from there, I would pencil in Seth for being one of the first feuds he has once that concludes.
Yes, so like for me right now, Sammy Solo and Reigns in some form or fashion against each other is more intriguing just because it's intra-bloodline, it's totally fresh. Even Kevin Owens in that mix, I'm a little more intrigued by, but I can be talked into it. You know, it's that next tier, and it's not that I wouldn't want to see Seth and Roman, but I guess I just need more storyline support for it than Seth being obnoxious, but fans sort of cheering him because of his song, and he drops Roman's name now and then. I want a little bit more of a backstory to build it up. so it feels as big as it ought to when they finally decide to go with it. Brad, I'll throw it to you. You can react to any of that.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, Seth straight up dissed Roman tonight and said, you're not, you know, that, I forget exactly the way he phrased it, but it was something like, you know, you're not as important as me on Monday Night Raw. And that was, you know, very interesting. I mean, to me, that's, you know, Roman's gotten in feuds for a lot less than that. So, you know, I just found that really interesting how they keep kind of dropping it in every now and then. Theory also, I thought it was very interesting that he brought up, you know, you're the third least successful member, third most successful member of the Shield.
Yep.
Very interesting remark, you know, considering, you know, they don't, you know, usually in the past like to talk about, you know, people that are not, that are in other promotions and things like that. But I found that interesting, and kind of drawing a little light to the success of Moxley or the perceived success of Moxley. So I found that interesting. Wanted your thoughts on that, but also just the amount of work that the Usos are putting in. I mean, they are literally carrying not only SmackDown, but Raw seemingly every week. I mean, without them there, I mean, you have a big problem. And, you know, Sammy too. I mean, Sammy has been there and solo on Raw pretty much every single week, and they're doing double duty, and it must be exhausting for them. And, you know, obviously they have a match with Hit Row coming up, I think, this week, I think on Friday, and then they had the championship match last week, and then tonight they have to do all this stuff. I mean, they are really putting in a tremendous amount of work, and just, you know, I feel like it kind of goes unnoticed a little bit, but I understand they are the champions of both shows, but it is, you know, must be
We lost a little bit at the end there, but Jake, go ahead and talk about the value of the Usos and really Sammy playing often on both shows lately.
I think it's absolutely necessary at this point. I think Raw has been struggling without a world champion and a single focal point for, you know, the upper card of the roster to sort of chase. And without Roman appearing because of his reduced schedule, you need his lieutenants to appear on the show, you know, to give that main event presence. And so I think the usage of the Usos makes a lot of sense. And the fact that they're a part of, you know, one of the best ongoing wrestling stories of my lifetime doesn't hurt either. You know, the Bloodline has been, generally speaking, excellent week to week, and the relationships that they've developed between all of them, and you know just seen by their attempt to dominate Raw tonight was a lot of fun. It introduced an element of chaos and unpredictability to the show that is often missing. And so, yeah, I mean, whether you believe that their contributions are a bit unsung at times, I guess I don't know if I necessarily agree with that. I hear a lot of praise for the Usos on a fairly regular basis, but I think, given how important the Bloodline is to WWE's business in general, I'm not surprised by their frequent appearances, and I think they're being counted on to give the presence that Roman, you know, isn't scheduled to give these days.
Yeah, the fact that the Bloodline is extended to the point that they can be on both shows regularly, and that the fact that they are active when Roman isn't around actually makes Roman's returns feel like a bigger deal, because it's like, oh, you wait till dad gets home. That old thing about, you know, the kids were bad and the mom would say, you wait till dad gets home, you're going to be in trouble. They're playing off of that in a pro wrestling way with, oh, just wait till Roman shows up and reacts to what happened, which goes full circle back to our discussion earlier in the show about how he'll react to the Usos losing here. And if that's one of the reasons they booked that finish, or simply a perk of a finish they wanted to do, where, you know, it's got to be addressed. But the Usos have, I mean, just the characters and the dynamic between them and Sammy has been one of the big hooks of the Bloodline storyline, and why it rightfully receives so much praise. The Usos are much more valuable now than I remember them ever being, and I think they're getting credit for that in most circles that I'm aware of. You know, and some of it is just, you know, your loyalty to a certain company or a certain team otherwise. But I think objectively speaking, they've been valuable and they've been utility players in that they're in a lot of places, you know, pay-per-views and longer matches on Raw and SmackDown and backstage skits. But part of the reason for that is they're really good. You know, they're really good in the ring and they've really grown as characters. You know, Edge and Christian didn't get any time talking. Matt and Jeff Hardy didn't get much time talking. But they turned out, especially Edge and Christian, to be really good talkers as time went on, and they were leaned on for that after they were sort of the silent wrestlers just meant to go have good matches. And the Usos have really grown, too, in a way where, you know, people who watch WWE just, they can tell you the difference between Jay and Jimmy, and they have a real sense of who they are in terms of their honored characters in a way with layers that we just haven't seen. So I just think this has been a really good couple years for them. Brad, back to you for any reaction or a different topic?
No, thank you for that. The Miz and his match and Corey Graves. I mean, guys, how funny was Corey Graves? I mean, maybe I have a different sense of humor, but, you know, saying, oh, Miz and his family, finally they'll have a Merry Christmas.
Yes.
And, he's like a real live action hero. And he was gushing over the Miz, and he always gushes over the Miz, but tonight it was at another level of hilarity, and I just thought he did such a great job. But he made that match even more interesting than, you know, anything really that was going on in the ring or anything with Bronson Reed to me. I mean, he was so damn funny and really just carried that whole entire match, in my opinion, in a lot of ways. And I did want your thoughts on that. Also, you know, Wade, I did tell you I got tickets back in late October for this SmackDown on the 30th in Tampa.
Mm.
And I feel like someone who bought like a stock at a very low price and got a big
yes.
payoff from it.
Yeah.
You know, like I can't believe I'm getting like a John Cena match and like, you know, a Roman Reigns match on television. And I'm really excited about that. And the other thing that, you know, not to bombard you guys, but this is my last thing, is that, you know, the Royal Rumble and the Elimination Chamber have to be the mechanism for setting up separate title matches and being able to separate the belts in some way. Because I do feel like Raw does really suffer without the championship on their show. Do you think that the Royal Rumble is going to be the mechanism where, like, you can only challenge for one belt sort of thing?
Jake, go ahead and reply to that.
Yeah, I don't really have a great answer at this point. I think there's so much of it that's probably undecided. But I think, you know, there's been a lot of smoke in regards to the possibility of Roman Reigns working both nights of WrestleMania. And so I think that's certainly one way to get there. And I'm in complete agreement that Raw has suffered mightily without a world championship and a world champion of its own. And so I would imagine if you're attempting to, you know, keep Roman's reign as Universal Champion, which is the longest reign, you know, in WWE at this point by a significant margin, that you could have him retain, you know, that Universal title and lose the WWE championship and, you know, move forward that way so that people like Seth Rollins and Kevin Owens and Cody Rhodes have a bit of a new lease on life where it doesn't feel like they're entirely dependent on Roman's schedule, you know, to make the weekly television product exciting. And so I look forward to returning to a bit of normalcy in that regard. I don't know whether it happens at WrestleMania or not. You know, the plans are probably very much still up in the air, but I do hope that is the plan and that something happens there, because I think they have a lot of storytelling possibilities in regards to the way the Bloodline is set up heading into the new year to, you know, to set up betrayals and some exciting things with them. So it looks like a, you know, and also depending on what The Rock is doing, I guess that's always
yeah.
hanging over the show. And so there's certainly plenty of opportunity for them to go down that road.
Very good. Brett, any final topic or closing words for you?
Yeah, that's it. I mean, that's really it for me. It just has to be the mechanism, because you can't have what happens to the person that wins Elimination Chamber? They don't, nothing happens for them? Like, it can't be like you win the Royal Rumble, oh, I challenge for the Undisputed, and then I win Elimination Chamber, and I say, oh, I challenge for the Undisputed. So, to me, there's, like, almost no other option, but I guess we'll see what happens. And thanks for taking the call, guys. And, Wade, again, I want to be your SmackDown correspondent. I'm going to have two little kids in the car with me, but so I hope I can even talk. But I hope I can do it, man.
Yeah, well, drop me an email, and we'll work it out, because I want you to be sure you're safe also. I don't want you driving two kids and talking to us.
No, I'll be good, man. Thank you, guys.
Okay, cool. Yep, you bet. I don't know if Paul Levesque has figured out what he's going to do with the championships. I just know he thinks the Bloodline holding all the belts makes the Bloodline a lot more important seeming than if they held one of the world titles and one of the tag titles. And it would take away the excuse, not entirely logical in its entire execution, but the excuse for them to be on both shows semi-regularly. But I am curious if after WrestleMania, if there's a draft, if they decide to split the titles or just create a new title. Triple H has been part of such a ceremony, where you just don't necessarily, I don't know. I mean, you can't not strip Roman of a title and then introduce another world title, because that's like a third world title belt and it'll feel inferior. But like I said, he's been through that before in a variation. So what's your prediction on, say next summer, if the belts are still around Roman or someone who beats Roman or split up?
Well, I hope the answer is that they're split up. I think the weekly television shows are much better, when the 3-hour show has a world title. And I think it's a lot easier to get around Roman's schedule on a 2-hour show, particularly when you have strong secondary champions like Gunther around, and the ability to have people, returning from injury at some point. I think Drew McIntyre is probably going to be back pretty soon. He has a ruptured eardrum. You have Cody Rhodes coming back at a certain point. Hopefully people like Charlotte Flair will be returning sooner than later. And so there is some star power on the shelf. And a lot of people over on Raw that feel like they're sort of in this arrested development phase where nobody can really feel like they're reaching the top, of the show anymore, because Roman is just the guy who kind of lords above everyone. And so my prediction is they find a clever way to get one of those titles off of Roman and allow him to retain his Universal Championship and keep that long reign intact. And from there, I think maybe Cody or Seth Rollins or Kevin Owens are probably my top picks for people who would be challenging for that world title over on Raw.
Yeah, they've got a good selection. I mean, they've got a good mix. We're not done with calls yet, but I want to go to JB in Detroit next. He brings up some topics we haven't covered yet, or at least one. He goes, "Hi team, JB from Detroit. What do we think is going on with MVP and Bobby Lashley? Could this be leading to a Hurt Business reunion, even if it consists of different wrestlers?" What do you make of the follow-up to the big angle that closed Raw last week, Pierce firing Lashley? Just felt like they didn't do a lot with it. It was like, oh, yeah, we had a meeting and Bobby will be back. And they didn't – just felt like they thought, well, that was a bad idea, or we're going to punt on this and draw more attention to it on a different week because we have so much going on this week. What do you make of it, Jake?
I think we're going to get the Hurt Business coming back. It wasn't completely lost on me that we saw MVP attempting to talk to Adam Pearce, and we also saw Cedric Alexander and Shelton Benjamin attacked by the Bloodline backstage and shown together on camera, right around the same time you saw MVP. And so I think that's probably a direction that they're going, and I think it's a good idea. I think Alexander and Benjamin have seen their value plummet since the Hurt Business disbanded. It's clear, Vince McMahon didn't have any plans for them once the Hurt Business was over with, and Triple H hasn't been able to pick up that slack since his return. He's had his hands full with, dozens of other creative problems that they're trying to solve. And so the Hurt Business, getting a reintroduction after, the reset of Bobby Lashley on screen getting fired seems like a good place to go to me. And if it's around WrestleMania or in opposition to the Bloodline. I don't know exactly what the timing is going to be or you know, how they're going to be aligned. I'm assuming they're going to be heels because that's just, it seems like the natural direction for them. But I'm looking forward to it because I think Shelton and Cedric are both super talented and haven't gotten an opportunity, you know, to show that in a while. And the tag division is thin and needs help. And having Lashley, you know, continue to lead that faction and Shelton and Cedric being, you know, the underneath tag team always worked and generally made for some pretty interesting television.
Yeah. This week felt like we're planting a seed with MVP, and it still not addressing the firing and just a vague reference to some meeting. It just seemed like it deserved a little bit more. But if they pay it off in the next week or two, no big deal. But it was a big show closing angle. Lashley's a big star, and it just seemed like it deserved more than just some hints of what might come next. JB also says, we were talking about this, it's been a long time since I've seen a crowd as dead for a match as it was for Miz and Loomis. Bad build to the match and a bad match, not much redeeming about it except potentially the return of Jonah. And he says, is it a coincidence that Miz has been so involved with recent returning or debuting talent? Jake, I'd say it is a coincidence. I don't think there's anything to make of it. How about you?
Yeah, I wouldn't draw too strong of a conclusion there. I think they needed an escape hatch for this match to continue this feud, and they needed The Miz to have some help because, you know, he was outnumbered by the babyfaces for some weird reason, you know, in a feud where he's already a fairly weak heel. And so, yeah, I think, you know, it was just a good place to reintroduce Bronson Reed or Jonah. You know, I assume you know, that he's probably not going to get as strong of a push as he was getting in New Japan, but I'm assuming the paychecks are probably a bit better in WWE, so I don't blame him for making the jump back over here. And, you know, he did have a pretty good character in NXT that seemed like it had some promise before he was let go, and so hopefully they can get back to that point. I think he could be a very strong addition to the mid-card once they get him in the right place.
Yeah, New Japan's loss is WWE's gain. He's a good talent, and I'm curious what trajectory Paul Levesque has for him. Like, is he, if he's linked with Miz for a while, is the idea to do a breakup angle and he turns babyface, or have them team for a long time? Like, it doesn't feel like a natural fit with those two. So it seems like they would have something else in mind in particular for a story arc. So yeah, I'm intrigued by it, but he's a good talent, and I think, again, one of those Levesque favorites who Vince McMahon didn't see enough in or was just part of the unfortunate cutbacks. But he proved himself in New Japan, and I think people who aren't super familiar with him will be pleasantly surprised by what he brings and what he adds to Raw. All right. Let's go to a Skype caller here. I'll go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from. Oh, they dropped off. All right, Colin Baltimore, you are up next. Kyle, what's on your mind about tonight's Raw?
I want to talk about Bianca and Alexa and the situation that,
yes.
I think the problem that I have still with Bianca still, because I just a couple of weeks ago about Bianca, about being, felt like to me, she, every time they have Bianca out there, at least out there in the ring with the crowd, she always comes out and sits down and watches these people wrestle. And I'm saying, and she's been doing that for the majority of at least the summer, ever since she won the championship. And I am completely bored of her character, pretty much. I am intrigued of Alexa, even though I don't want her with Bray Wyatt anymore. I think she could do her own thing, and hopefully she'll stay doing her own thing. But this whole teases was every time they showed that flash, every time Alexa's on screen, they have to show a flash of that symbol every time Alexa's on screen. I don't like that. She's going to go back to Bray Wyatt, which I don't care for. I'm all in favor for her being a heel again. I think heel Alexa in 2017 was the best Alexa. The guy with the guy's character, just her being a heel, is super interesting. And I think the reason why I find Alexa and Becky and Rhea, them three women, particularly interesting, because they always talk and they always get invested in what all three of them are doing, whoever they're in a feud with. But with Bianca, who's the champion, who should be a bigger star, because I view, because for me, I view like the Livid being Becky number one, Rhea probably number two, Alexa maybe number four, and Bianca maybe like number three. But I'm sorry to put like number four, at least for me in my personal opinion, because it's just not been all that interesting. So what do you think? I know that Alexa's probably not going to win the championship, but in terms of where are they going to have Bianca heading into the next year, heading into Royal Rumble, WrestleMania, how can they make this woman interesting within her character to make, I guess for me personally, more intrigued about her matches, even because if she's always quiet every time she enters the arena for the last few months at this point.
Jake, your thoughts?
I think the issue with Bianca's character for me, and it's not that she's outright bad. I think most of her matches have been quite good. It's that she so rarely gets an opportunity to show any vulnerability or weakness. You know, and maybe that's not what WWE is going for with a lot of its baby faces a lot of the time, but you know, they don't give you much with Bianca that allows her to seem relatable, like personal struggles or personality quirks that she's got to work through or any of those things. And maybe Alexa will be the catalyst to introduce some of those. I think the segment that they did tonight was good, and it set them off on a potentially interesting direction. And I'm assuming that match in 2 weeks is probably going to, you know, as much as people hate it, have some sort of non-finish that results in them having a match at the Royal Rumble. But that's seemingly the way WWE books these days. And so that's the direction I think they're going. But I think with Bianca, they just need more layers. And it seems like a lot of the time when she's in the ring cutting a promo, she's having to fight back a lot of the heel tendencies that she displayed in NXT in order to continue to perform as a babyface. And so down the road, I hope they give her an opportunity to lean into that stuff a little bit more, because you know there is a fine line between confidence and arrogance, and I think that Bianca would do well if she just fully leaned into that all-American athlete level of arrogance that, peak Kurt Angle did so well. I think she's at, you know, at that point where, you know, I mean, just look at her. She's in incredible condition. She's an amazing athlete. She has all the credentials in the world. She should be full of herself. And I think it would make for a very fun heel character. That'd be a nice break from what she's been doing for a couple of years. So I think if they can't add layers to her babyface act, then just turn her heel and have her lean into that stuff.
And if she's going to stay babyface, have her be more real, more like her actual self. I think that's where the money is. I think this put on, you know, with the catchphrases and the kind of sing song, just pull the string and out comes my catchphrase approach to her promos just doesn't connect with fans. And that's unfortunate. Alexa, I really like the segment in that Bliss talked about her history. You know, she tied together or incorporated, this backstory that she has abandonment issues, that she felt left alone when Bray Wyatt abducted her, turned her into a dark version of herself and then disappeared. And she said that she's become a shell of a human being she doesn't even recognize, and she's still trying to work through things. And it made you kind of sympathetic towards her. And, you know, you're like, come on, Bianca, give her another chance. And then as soon as Bianca turns her back, boom, she hits her with a vase and breaks it over her. I'm curious if this is just the definitive turn or if Bliss is like ultra apologetic and says, I don't know what got into me. And then do we believe her? Does it even matter if we believe her? There's different places they can go on this. I would have been okay if they waited for Bliss to kind of reveal this much about her current approach or character. I don't say dragged it out because that is a negative connotation, but they stretched it out a couple extra weeks. I would have been okay with it, but either way, you know, having now it seems like there's a sense of direction, and some of the things Corey Graves have been saying about her on commentary that it felt more like him observing she didn't seem all that into things was this long, you know, it's confirmed as it was sort of a long-term planting of seeds for Bliss to be this lost soul who is going to find herself perhaps by rechanneling Bray. And then the question is, does she really link up with Bray, or is what happened with her and Bray just the reason for her becoming who we saw tonight? I'm just not sure on that. Kyle, what do you think?
I think that when with Alexa, I think she, I think my issue is if she wants to be with Bray Wyatt again, I just don't want her to do the whole supernatural stuff like she was doing before. I thought that wasn't great. I didn't like that. I didn't enjoy that. If she wants to be an evil character like she was when she was the goddess, but a different version of that, but she still ends up having great matches and actually have matches that makes her feel like a evil character. She wants to be a heel. Like, I just don't want her to do any spooky, hokey stuff, just how Bray Wyatt has been doing over at SmackDown, which has been absolutely terrible with LA Knight. I've been completely off and not doing great work with LA Knight at first, so I don't want that happening with Alexa, because Alexa is really good in the ring. I think she's good on the mic. She doesn't need any supernatural stuff in order to be a compelling heel character, if that's the direction you want to go in, which I'm all in favor in that direction. So hopefully that's what happens. It's kind of like what she said tonight. It's not about Bray Wyatt, it's about me. So let it be about her. Don't let it be about Wyatt. That's my thing about that.
Yeah.
So I hope they go to that direction. So we'll see what happens there. But I'll go to Becky and Bailey. Becky's super over, and she is so. Like I guess before, she's the most popular babyface, at least on Monday Night Raw, and it's every time she comes on screen, she has that aura of top star and coolness to me. Every time I see her, it's like this one is really over Bianca Belair in terms of credibility of a big star, the way she's been presented, and ever since she came back from injuries, like she was like mainly she was sorely missed on Raw. I felt like, so I'm kind of glad she was back from last month. So with this match tonight with Bayley, and I was in some respects I kind of was fine with Bayley defeating Becky, even though it still hurt a little bit, but I understand the situation and what to have a dull finish with a distracted finish with Bayley with damage control, stuff like that. So I guess with me, so I think what they may end up doing, I'm guessing, is that whenever they have their second match, probably will be on Raw. I don't know if they'll do something in the Royal Rumble itself where they could have, because I could potentially see like at least the final four, maybe three being Becky, Rhea, and Bayley, the final three of the Rumble match, possibly. And before then, their final match between Becky and Bayley, I could see it sometime on January with some type of stipulation of maybe like a cage match or something, so damage control won't get involved, and that's how Becky will win. What do you think about the dynamic between Becky and Bayley? Because I think so far, this actually makes Bayley more interesting ever since she was being with Becky, because this whole damage control thing has been a unfortunate failure, and I think EO and Dakota need to be kind of in their separate go their separate directions at this point, because something isn't working. But what do you think about that dynamic between Becky and Bayley heading into the Rumble of some sort?
Thanks, Kyle. Jake, I think Bayley needed Becky. I mean, we talked a decent amount about this earlier in the show, just in general, what happened with them tonight. But I am really hoping that this lights a spark under Bayley or freshens up her character, or Becky can bring out something better in her than we've seen. It feels like, you know, not the low end of Bayley, but of what we expected, but a little bit less than even the lower end of what we'd expect from Bayley. And it's hard to put a finger on it. I don't think anyone's called up and just nailed, you know, this is what is not what we were hoping for from Bayley, but she just, my analysis was she just seemed more into it and was having more fun even during the Performance Center / Thunderdome era during the pandemic lockdowns. And she sort of seems like she's showing up for a paycheck, or she's just resigned to be doing what she's told because she doesn't believe in it. I don't know. I mean, it's just pure conjecture, but it's just, she doesn't seem all that into it. And she really seemed into things a few years ago. Maybe Becky can bring something better out of her, and that's what's needed. And she was sort of just filling time until Becky was healthy and came back. Jake, your thoughts?
Yeah, I get the impression that, you know, that Becky was in, it was supposed to be a major part of that feud. You know, you had the shoulder injury at SummerSlam that kept Becky out for several months. I don't know if it was 3 or 4 by the time everything was all said and done. But you essentially had Bianca and Bayley, you know, kind of killing time, more or less. You know, the feud that they had planned had to be entirely scrapped, and they had to come up with something else. And I just don't think Bayley seemed particularly enthused by it. And you look, you know, at the week to week promos from Damage Control, and it was just basically, you know, bog standard heel crowd work. You know, there didn't seem to be a whole lot of direction there at all, and they didn't even get the better of most of their feuds. And so I think this is a new lease on life for Bayley, because her and Becky do have a lot of history to play off of, and they do have some good chemistry in the ring together, and they both looked genuinely happy to be competing with each other. You could see, you know, yeah, both of them cracking smiles at the opportunity to work together. And so I think this is something that they must have been planning for a while, and the injury derailed that, and hopefully it brings, you know, good performances out of both of them. And I do assume we're going to see a rematch on Raw before we get to the pay-per-view, because they got a lot of hours of TV to fill, and no PLE for another 5 or 6 weeks at this point. And so it seems like they're loading up the early part of January with these rematches, and then we'll get 2 or 3 or 4 weeks of solid build for the Rumble. And so I'm looking forward to seeing Bayley revitalized a little bit, and we certainly haven't seen her best work since she's returned. But, you know, I hesitate to make any conclusions about her motivation or, you know, her character in general, because I don't know. I've never had to come back from a year plus long out, being out from an ACL injury, and how much, you know, emotional and physical turmoil that causes. It probably does take someone a while to feel like they're back to normal again. And hopefully this feud will get her back on the correct track, because there isn't really anybody in the women's division at this point who, from a performance standpoint, when it comes to just all around work, whether it's in the ring or on the microphone, is better than Becky Lynch. I think she's at the top of that class, and there are very few people that are in that realm with her. I mean, even factoring in most of the men's roster, I think she's like right underneath Roman Reigns in terms of in drawing power for WWE at this point. And so I think if there's anybody who can get Bayley back on track, it's going to be her.
Yes, and that's the thing with Bayley is when she's having fun, you know, we saw a little glimpse of it when last Friday, where Cole said she's been good at, helping Kai and Sky or something like that. She goes, no, I've been great. And like, she just sort of overheard what they were saying and interjected it. Bayley is at her most fun when it doesn't seem like she's just scripted and then, you know, hitting the lowest hanging fruit by insulting local sports teams in the local city. And because when she's so engaged, she's so entertaining, and it's that we've seen glimpses of it, but it hasn't been something consistently part of her presentation so far. And that's where, you know, it's not getting inside her head and knowing how she really feels, but it's how is she coming across? And she's coming across as I'm, you know, kind of phoning it in, and she's better than that. And that's where I hope, you know, Bayley changes, you know, changes things. I hope we get to another level. All right, let's go to our next call. We'll go to Grant in Detroit, and then after that, it'll probably be Javier time. Grant, thanks for calling. What's been your mind about Raw tonight?
So, Wade, I missed the first half of the show, because I don't know if anybody said this yet, but was that, like, the most four ladder match every day?
That has been brought up a time or two. Yes.
Yeah. And then my only other thing is, so I know you kept saying like that the WWE just had a very thin roster. That's why they keep bringing people back. But this might be like my third time bringing it up. Like, at what point does this get like, there's no way we can keep knocking AEW for all these returns for people that, or debuts for people that with no context that most people not going to know that's in your main audience and not say something about Triple H bringing in all these NXT people and not giving them any type of background until after they are ready to debut or re-debut or however you want to say.
We did cover that earlier, Grant. I won't just repeat it just for you. But yeah, I mean, we talked about the way that talent's being brought back and how we feel about it, and if it'd be better to shake it up a little bit in terms of some vignettes and other things other than, you know, the run in pop. Anything else you want to bring up?
The only other thing I want to probably bring up is, like I said, with Seth Rollins, they are going forward with the babyface thing, but how do you all think they're going to play it when Cody comes back? Because eventually they have to solve that issue.
Yeah.
So do you think Cody comes back as the heel, or do they flip Seth back heel just for that one feud? Or that's the thing that's a little confusing.
Yeah, thanks, Grant. I think the lay of the land is interesting for Cody coming back. It's not like WWE just stopped storylines until Cody came back. There's a decent amount of movement in play with different wrestlers, including Austin Theory and Seth Rollins, and Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. Do you think there's an obvious place for Cody to drop in and just regain his momentum or you know, kind of pick up where he left off? Or is the novelty of Cody, the guy who left and he's Dusty Rhodes' son, but then he was in AEW or Ring of Honor and then AEW and then back, is momentum loss is going to be hard to get back because now he's just a WWE guy who was out injured as opposed to this guy who returned from AEW as a co-founder essentially in EVP. What do you think of the lay of the land and the different setting and how people react to Cody? My leaning is he's going to pick up where he left off in terms of people being into him, and you know every wrestler has to earn it week after week, as you know, with as the case with Bayley and others. You can't just live off your past. But I think he'll be okay, but I'm not sure of it because I don't know if they know exactly of the timeline of his return, and I don't see like this obvious thing they're setting up for him. And as Grant brought up, you've got Seth dropping his name at a time when Seth is trying to be a babyface, and it seems like that would be a weird matchup. But that storyline is there, and Seth is the main thing that has changed since Cody was out with the injury. So, yeah, Jake, your updated thoughts on Cody.
Yeah, I think, if anything, I hope they learn something from Bray Wyatt's return, and not in the sense that they need to do a bunch of QR codes and spooky vignettes and stuff like that, but in the sense that I think it would benefit them to advertise Cody's return slowly and a long time in advance. And I hope they can build anticipation for it. Have other characters on the show react to it and talk about it. Set up a challenger for him that feels natural. Whether if it's not Seth Rollins immediately, then have somebody immediately ready to go. And introduce him in a way to where his return feels like a genuinely big deal. But I guess, you know, since he left, you know, obviously all this political turmoil has been happening at the company. You know, it's not just the on-screen characters that have changed. It's the entire makeup of the locker room and the political environment. And
the ultimate decision maker.
And the ultimate booker. And so, you know, do the promises that, that Vince McMahon made to Cody still stand? Probably not necessarily. And so I don't know if he's going to be the guy that resumes the track to being a world champion upon his return. I think he should definitely be in consideration for that. You know, I think his performance in the few months that he was able to work before his injury more than justified that. And I think he is creative enough as a talent to be able to make that work. It's just a matter of, you know, do you have a place to slot him in immediately? I don't know. You know, he's going to be returning at the hottest time of the year when you already have extremely hot angles around, you know, the Bloodline and the Unified World Championships happening. And you have to assume, you know, you're going to have a lot of other returning stars, whether it's The Rock and Steve Austin and Brock Lesnar. You know, is Cody a guy you want to introduce into that mix and potentially get lost in it? I don't know the answer to that. I think it's a tough question. I think a lot of people have assumed he's going to be returning at the Royal Rumble, but if they have a lot of plans in place and you have a lot of people that could push Cody into the background, and you know, some of those part-time stars that typically return around you know, WrestleMania time, you know, if you have The Rock and Steve Austin and, you know, I don't know, Logan Paul and John Cena and other people potentially booked for matches at WrestleMania, if those people aren't going to be there the night after WrestleMania, then maybe you bring him back then and have him be a major part of your show going forward. And it all depends on the timing of his injury too. I haven't heard anything recently about the status of, you know, of his ability to rehab and get back into ring shape and all those things. He could still be months away for all I know.
All right. Very good. Thanks, Grant. Thanks, Kyle. Thanks to our callers. Let's now shift to Javier time. Javier Machado, PW Torch contributor, joining us for the roundtable segment late in the show here. Javier, good to talk to you.
Hey, Wade. Hey, Jake. How's it going?
Good, good. Curious what you want to talk about Raw tonight and our show so far.
Well, I think it's not hyperbole for me to say that. I think this has been the best Raw in
post-show
December.
In months? Oh.
Well, I mean,
Jake was really happy there for a
second. I heard it that way, but
yeah.
Yes. But since I started watching wrestling again, because usually this is around the time where things get like really slow. Usually, like once you hit Survivor Series and you start to build to that, and then you have the Saudi show, and then it things go, you know, get really boring until around the time of Royal Rumble where things pick up again. But I thought this was an excellent show overall. Things were lively. There was constant stuff going on, constant cross-pollination of storylines with AJ Styles being involved in one thing and then, you know, getting a match against Sami Zayn. You know, it made the screwy finishes a little bit more palatable since we had two big matches where with no real finish. An unsatisfying finish, but I thought it was a really good episode. You guys were talking about the whole Cody thing. I think that Cody, I agree with you, Jake, where you promote him coming. I think that right before Royal Rumble, and according to Brandy, if you believe her, he's already ready to come back. He advertised himself for the Royal Rumble. Probably even say, hey, you know, since I haven't been around, I want to make sure I show that I'm the best and that I'm going to, you know, throw everyone out. And then he puts himself in as the number one. And if he doesn't win the Rumble, then he can win the Elimination Chamber. I do think that that's how they'll at least, you know, have two people challenge for the title, because I do think if Roman Reigns is going to be involved on both nights, that would be the best time to break the belts, particularly since Cody did, you know, said that the championship that he wants to win is the WWE championship, not the Universal, because that was the champion his dad was never able to win. So you got all that stuff, you know, just ready, laid out for him if they decide to go his.
I agree, and I think if Reigns comes out of wrestling both nights at WrestleMania, defending each title each night, and he remains champion, and I wouldn't rule that out, that is strengthening Reigns' character and his reign. But it's also your escape hatch because of the two-night WrestleMania format. It creates an excuse, and as you bring up, Cody wanting one title in particular, and it predates his injury, and it was going back to the beginning, that might have always been on their mind. as a way to split the belts and get one back to Raw. And I mean, we consistently hear people complaining, and I get it, that Raw feels like less of a show when, you know, the Raw champion, it just isn't on Raw much at all and isn't even in the opening. You know, he didn't become a Raw wrestler just because he won the Raw belt. It's kind of like he won it and took it somewhere else. Anyway, Jake, do you want to respond to any of what Javier said there?
No, I think the two-night WrestleMania, you know, and the possibility of Reigns losing one of those championships is the path that I would take. It's just one of those things where, you know, if one of those matches is with The Rock, is that going to be night two or night one? You know, is Roman going to defeat The Rock to retain his Universal Championship and then lose to Cody on night two? Or are you just going to have Roman go in fresh and drop that World Championship on night one and then somehow pull out a win against his cousin on night two? It's a tough thing to book. There's no real easy answers there.
And does Roman end up with the biggest WrestleMania payday in history if he gets paid for each match, you know, if he gets paid double of what he get paid for one match? But that's between, you know, Roman and
I'm sure his agent will make that argument, Wade. Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, yes. I mean, I just, oh man, the money WWE wrestlers are making right now, you know, it's at a higher level than ever from what I hear. And being the top guy working back-to-back WrestleMania nights, you know, I mean, adding to its WrestleMania match total and certainly getting two paydays. I don't know if it's going to be double or not, but, man, yeah. Anyway, Javier, back to you.
And for as far as the reckoning with Seth Rollins is concerned, I think people are going to be mostly disappointed in that because I don't think you could shove a reckoning in the middle. Most likely he's going to get his some level of satisfaction by being the one who eliminates Seth Rollins in the Rumble. Maybe that also cross paths inside the Elimination Chamber, mm-hmm. but I don't think there's going to be like a continuation of the feud per se. Maybe if he wins the title, then they can pick it up after WrestleMania. But I don't think prior to things that, you know, I think people who are like expecting them to pick up where they left off, I think they're going to be disappointed. I think because I think they're each going to be involved in other endeavors.
One risk if Seth throws out Cody, I'm sorry, if Cody throws out Seth, is fans will boo Cody and we get a whole Aleister Black domino effect of fans just, you know, in WWE. And I would have thought AEW fans would be more likely to support Cody through thick and thin than WWE fans. So I could see fans turning against Cody if he eliminated Seth because Seth has become, you know, pretty popular and you get kind of more hardcore style crowd at WWE special events. I don't know. They got to be careful with Cody because of the history of fans turning on him. And I don't know. They'd have to play that up the right way if they do have them cross paths. But anyway, go ahead, Javier, if you have anything else.
Talk about the Bliss segment. I hate to break Kyle's heart on this, but he's probably not listening, right?
Kyle's still with us. Should I bring him on for you? Do you want to talk to Kyle?
If he wants to.
Well, let's see. Kyle, do you want to hear what Javier has to tell you? You ready for this, Kyle? All right, well, okay. Well, that's fine. That's putting him on the spot. He's still listening, but apparently he might not be able to contribute. So go ahead.
Yeah, so I think that this is what her talking about the Bray Wyatt thing is her definitely getting involved in that story, not necessarily with him, because I think this kind of plays into what I've been saying, that the people who have issues with Bray Wyatt are going to come back to haunt him. And she seemed negative about her whole experience, blaming him for abandoning her. Granted, you know, she was the one who was responsible for everything that went down, but hey, we'll ignore that little fact. Inconvenient fact, but she, you know, so she's going to be the, I think she's going to go after him because, you know, resentment for him going away. I think that's the most likely thing. And, you know, one thing, I don't know if you noticed when she hit, Bianca with the vase, it was a change in personality right when the thing flashed, which if does draw things further into the supernatural realm, because, you know, how is this a trigger for her when she's not even looking at it? It does, you know, feel more, you know, that feels like it's adding more to the supernatural as opposed to, you know, plausible deniability. But I do think that that's the direction they're going with Bliss.
Could Bliss ultimately be behind Uncle Howdy and be the heel force opposite of Bray as a babyface? And can that continue as a separate thing, or are they always going to be have to be linked? They can't exist separate from one another.
Well, I doubt she's the one behind it. I think she's also going to be someone who's being manipulated. And I was thinking, because while I was on the call, I had a flash of thought, because when she talked about, you know, going to the psychologist and dealing with abandonment issues and the stuff and the stuff that she went through, a big thing in the QR codes and stuff that you got with, you know, if you followed all the clues with the on the Bray Wyatt side of things was him with a lot of papers from psychologists, you know, with what their a diagnosis of his was. So I'm wondering if ultimately the big bad behind everything is a psychologist, you know, who's basically manipulating, you know, the people around him to get revenge on, maybe, because didn't the psychologist that she went to was the one that they had used previously?
Do you remember that, Jake? Either way?
I'm not recalling perfectly, but I...
Yeah, I'm not sure either way.
Yeah, I think the QR code stuff was interesting, but ultimately, whatever they decide to do, I think it has to be something that you can execute, you know, in front of the screen as a part of wrestling television, right? I think the issue with all of Bray Wyatt's stories going back years is that they were almost too ambitious for the medium, in a sense, because it's not something that you can easily pull off in front of a live audience. Like, even at the Thunderdome with that burning image of Randy Orton lighting the Fiend on fire, it looks so terrible that it was beyond saving. And so if the idea is that, you know, Bray Wyatt is having some sort of psychic influence on Alexa Bliss, or the trauma of their previous relationship is driving her to have some kind of psychotic break now that he's returned to the company, that I could live with. But I hope they don't lean too far into the supernatural this time. It would be far easier to just do something along the lines of, well, yeah, Uncle Howdy appeared as a separate person from Bray Wyatt because he arranged for those things to happen, because it's all a part of his mind games, because he's a man living in deep denial of who he actually is, because you have Bray Wyatt, the character, going out on TV talking about how he's turning a new leaf and how he's trying to put away the demons that, you know, had run his life before. But in essence, you know, he's just running a con, because in reality, he actually is that person who he always was, and he's been manipulating everyone along the way, including the fans. That's far more interesting to me than somebody, you know, being able to reach through the television and manipulate somebody's mind through supernatural means. That's just a little bit beyond the pale for what I can tolerate on a wrestling show.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't have. Oh, go ahead, Javier. Yeah.
Yeah, no, because I don't think I've talked to you about this version of Bray Wyatt, because I don't think we've talked in a while. Because my take on the whole thing is that the Howdy character is actually manipulating events to make it look like Bray Wyatt is the bad guy. That Bray Wyatt actually is trying to turn over a new leaf, and that the Howdy character is someone who doesn't want him to turn a new leaf, and is basically, you know, maybe someone that he's wronged, and that the sins of Bray Wyatt's past are coming back for him. Because the story of the Fiend was that he was getting back at the people who wronged him. And, you know, my thoughts for this story is that now this is the story of the people who wronged him coming back for, you know, to get revenge on him.
Jake, what do you think of that?
I don't hate it, but I'd have to, you know, I guess it depends on who they're going to unveil as being under the Howdy mask, because there's really very few people that would make that really interesting. You know, like who could you pull out of, you know, the history of Bray Wyatt's act on TV, you know, that would fit that profile and would be able to maintain an interesting story at that high of a level once the jig is up? You know, like I think they've done a fairly good job with Bray of keeping the mystery, interesting while, you know, they haven't, you know, essentially, you know, unveiled what's behind the curtain. But as soon as, and this goes back years, whether it's the cult leader character or the Fiend, it's like the longer this goes on and the more you appear behind the curtain, the more it appears like they've had this very well thought out from the beginning. And I hope this time is different. And you know, your thoughts around this and the sequence of events and how it may play out could be very good. But unless they have somebody who can, you know, go toe-to-toe with him in the ring and hold a candle to him on the microphone, like that has the idea of somebody orchestrating this could be a disaster. I trust Bray a lot more than I trust a lot of others to be able to get these promos to work. And him being the orchestrator behind everything makes a lot more sense to me than introducing extra parties that may or may not be able to execute when the time is right.
Javier?
Well, some of the people I'm expecting to run into him, I don't know who the ultimate person, you know, pulling the strings is, but some of the people who could come after him that could be, you know, like stepping stones to the final boss battle, as it were. Because you have Rowan out there, Alexa Bliss in some way, shape, or form. You have Bo Dallas, because Bo Dallas is possibly could be the mastermind, since he's, you know, actual family, and you know, just drop the Bo Dallas and, you know, introduce him as him being his actual brother. You also have some other supernatural people whose names been tied to WWE lately, like Vincent from ROH and recently Impact. Who he can really do the spooky stuff well. So he's the one who's masterminding things, as, you know, somebody who, you know, from Bray Wyatt's past, he could, you know, keep the whole, you know, cultish kind of thing going. So, I mean, that's just one of the directions. The other direction is that, yeah. Go ahead.
I don't want to get too lost in the weeds, but I'm just imagining, like, when the moment happens, and it's like, you know, the higher power, the greater power pulling off the hood. And, you know, if it's not something of the caliber of, like, Vince McMahon or something, like, if it's Vincent from Ring of Honor, and he's, like, are you just like, oh, you're kidding me, right? Like that's the reaction that I would expect for a moment like that. So if they are going to have somebody other than Bray be the ultimate, you know, greater power here, or the maestro of this manipulation, it has to be somebody absolutely huge that people are going to freak out about. Otherwise, I think it would just be a flop. That's just my personal opinion. I don't know what you.
Vincent would have to be really good in that role and make a really big, like, good first impression for it to not be the letdown you're speaking of. Jake, they'd have to be really high on him, and that'd be a lot of pressure to be dropped into that spot. But go ahead, Javier. I know you want to reply to that.
Yeah, because a lot of people online have already been speculating that Uncle Howdy is Bo Dallas, so it could be a personal, you know, personal relationship in that respect. In which case, you know, and people know that he's his brother, you can, you know, that could slot in. But yes, I mean, it's been interesting, and considering the fact that also Liv Morgan is technically part of the family, because of her connection to Bo Dallas, that I think that could be either someone who comes to help Bray Wyatt to take on the Alexa Bliss. So, because, you know, since there's going to be, you know, Bliss is going to be involved in some way, shape, or form, I can see, you know, one be on Bray Wyatt's side and the other one be against them. So, and face each other off. So, but yeah, definitely in the weeds there. There was also a lot of interesting little nuggets. The whole MVP coming up to speak with Lashley. Do you think that they might end up keeping Omos as part of it? If they do bring back Hurt Business, you think they keep Omos as part of it? Because that would be interesting to have both Omos and Lashley as part of a faction.
Yeah, it actually didn't cross my mind. Out of sight, out of mind with Omos. I don't know. I mean, why not? I don't know. Now that I'm thinking about it, I mean, you could. I mean, what do you think, Jake? I don't see a reason not to, but I think they'd have to explain if he wasn't around, why he wasn't around, if they do bring MVP and Lashley back together again, which I'm for. I like Lashley more with MVP than alone.
Yeah, I think if you're going to have a heavy in a faction that contains Bobby Lashley, it has to be somebody like Omos, right? Like, it has to be somebody who's just a giant who who is physically larger than Lashley. So I think that could work. It might even work well if you have, you know, Omos come back and appear like he is opposed to the new Hurt Business because MVP abandoned him and then they they pull the rug out from under everybody and he's a part of the group. There's some easy wins you could get there, and it keeps Omos from being overexposed, which I think was the biggest issue that they had with him working with MVP on television and squashing 9 or 22 jobbers a week or whatever he was doing there for a while. It just wasn't working, and so having him be a part of something successful and be attached to something successful, I think could go a long way to improving his status with the company.
Javier, back to you.
And seeing also a little nugget that dropped, Austin Theory, when he came out, said the champ is here, since speculation is that he's going to be wrestling John Cena at WrestleMania. So I thought that was a nice little touch for the people who are plugged in and listen to the rumors. I liked most of what he did. I liked him. I liked the jab at Seth Rollins being the third best member, the third most successful member of the Shield. The only like issue was that he kind of went a little bit meta when he said they've given you the ball and you keep fumbling it.
It didn't jump out to me, but now that you mention it, I remember it. And yeah, I'm not crazy about that stuff. I mean, I think that just slips in under the, under the bar of me being outraged, but it's pushing the limit.
Yeah. Where I lost the, I agree with you, but where I lost it was because right after that, he said, just like the Chicago Bears. I was like, oh, come on.
Iowa has chosen to be more of a Bears fan than a Vikings fan state. So, you know, Iowa gets what they get. Then they can have the Bears this year. I'll just put it that way. Don't jump on our bandwagon in Viking country.
So what did you guys think about his performance with standing across from Rollins?
Theory? I thought it was really good.
I would agree with that. I think he's been much, much better since they dropped the obnoxious cell phone selfie gimmick that he's been playing, and he's been taking himself a bit more seriously. He's a much more complete performer than he displayed 6 months ago, and I think he's on the right track. You know, there was a point, you know, where he was doing that gimmick where, you know, it had been reported that, you know, Cena was potentially interested in working SummerSlam, and then all of a sudden he wasn't because Austin Theory just wasn't in the place to do that. And I think now he really is. Like I think he and John Cena could have a compelling feud for WrestleMania, and Cena's history with the United States Championship definitely helps that along as well.
I get a kick out of the idea that John Cena's watching WWE TV every week, taking notes on whether somebody is worthy of him being their opponent, or who's in his ear updating him on that conclusion. It's like, you know, I mean, maybe he does keep up and he did have that opinion. But the idea that he's, you know, sitting around watching WWE going, I don't think Theory quite makes the John Cena bar. I need to pass on this.
Sure he's a part of some group texts that keep him up to date. I don't think he's completely unplugged from the company.
Yes, and that would have to, that's what I was going to say, is that, like, who is that trusted advisor who said, John, not yet? But I checked with someone at WWE when Theory lost Money in the Bank, and I was like, is this a sign of Paul Levesque not being disappointed in him, or is he acting up? The response in so many words was, no, this is giving us something to work with him. And we haven't had that in recent months with him. Sit back, because we're going to parlay this into something. Because he has something now to work with that's different. It is a agitator, a disruptor in the character. So, and sure enough, you know, the next week they just frame the loss as a reset and a relaunch of who he is. And it does feel something that has a higher ceiling than what he was before he lost Money in the Bank. Javier.
Yeah, one quick thing. I kind of hope that they keep up this thing of Dominic getting sprayed with something in the eyes every show.
Wow. Yes. I mean, yes. Let's see how long they can keep that going.
So, you need to do at least one more time, because three times is where the comedy's at. So at least one more time, we gotta see that. You know.
Well, at least it's not Vince McMahon's WWE, where it would have continued for 12 weeks unimpeded.
Yeah.
Because he thought it was hilarious.
Although, part of me is like, let's take 12, let's go 12, 15 weeks. Let's see what kind of, liquid in the eye, how deep does that go on a list of things that you can work into a wrestling show?
The final week has to just be him throwing it in his own eyes, just out of spite for everybody who's done it to him. That's the real comedy.
You know, there's oftentimes like catering or picnics or parties. You know, someone would just accidentally, drop the plastic mustard bottle, and just when it hits the floor, it just shoots out and hits him in the eye. Like, you could get, you could get creative with this. Anyway, let's not. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, you got to do the skit where
bring John Moxley. Bring Dean Ambrose back to screw some mustard in his eye.
The moment where he gets something in his eye, and he's like, he reaches out for the water and pours it in his face and turns like rubbing alcohol. You know, one of those.
yes.
But yeah. I was surprised about Bronson Reed showing up. Jonah, I was not, since I haven't been plugged into to New Japan lately, I did not see that coming. I'm a bit more concerned because it feels like he works a lot better in like a New Japan environment. I wasn't too hot on him when he was on NXT. For whatever reason, I don't know why. But hopefully, he works out on Raw. And the Kevin Owens. Kevin Owens, I don't think I enjoyed it as much as his interaction with Elias, but his interaction with Seth Rollins and calling him out for their previous history and owning up to their previous history. And, his reaction when Seth Rollins was trying to downplay it so he didn't do it, I thought that was great.
Cool. Anything you want to respond to there, Jake?
I think most of it we already covered elsewhere on the show, so I don't want to drag it out much further.
Sure. Javier, anything else you want to add?
I believe that's it. You guys talked about that. I missed part of the show too. I think that's about it.
What part were you asking if we had talked about? I thought you brought up a couple points there.
No. About the interaction between Owens and Rollins.
Yeah. We did a good discussion on that.
I missed one. Did you guys talk about the intergender match? Because that was also another surprising thing for the show.
We did not. Although, is it? Like the way they talked about it, it was the match site. Never mind. My point doesn't apply. So we didn't talk about that. They made a big deal out of it, maybe a bigger deal than was called for, just given that, Tozawa is more of a comedy figure and he's been in the 24/7 division where men and women, leverage pin each other. But they made it seem like this was what was the quote? I think Graves said, "This is one of the most baffling things I've ever witnessed on Monday Night Raw," which is one of the most outlandish lies ever stated by anyone on Raw. Like, it's not even in the top 500. I mean, I think if we had plenty of time to come up with a top 500 list, and you just didn't tell someone this is an experiment to see if Tozawa Ripley makes it, but you just did had a bunch of panels come up with a top 500 list, I don't think this would make any of the top 500 lists. It just isn't that big of a deal. Jake, what'd you think of it, and did you think they oversold it?
Yeah, clearly they oversold it. I mean, if you've been watching a long time, you've seen far more outlandish interactions between men and women. I mean, at one point they were, diving off of the stage with 80-year-old women going through tables and whatnot. So, far from the most outrageous. Yeah, so I would say it's a bald-faced lie, but in terms of the match itself, I mean, it was basically an intergender match without really doing a full-on intergender match. It was a very safe, essentially Tozawa got almost zero actual offense in. And if it wasn't for the unfortunate series of botches, I think it would have been a lot more fun than it actually ended up being in practice. It was just a little bit sloppy, but the crowd seemed to be actually enjoying it, and I think it was a good way to put the focus on Ripley's power and strength. She's a fantastic performer, and I hope they continue to use her well.
What do you think, Javier?
Yeah, I pretty much co-signed everything Jake said. I was a bit worried when they were like, by the time you got to the second botch, I'm like, I hope they're not like going out of control. But yeah, I thought it was fine for what it was.
Did they not give Alpha Academy enough? Should Alpha Academy be losing to Anderson and Gallows? I mean, it seems like, I don't know. I guess I'm just higher on Alpha Academy over the next couple years than Gallows and Anderson, or next couple months even. Jake, what do you think?
Oh, yeah, I'm with you there. I think Gable is very underutilized. I think if you really hit the reset button on Gable and just promoted him as the, you know, as the athlete babyface that I think he did well in NXT, you know, he could be, you know, he could, I don't know if he'd be a world champion, but he could very credibly compete for the mid-card championships without a problem. And I'm not, you know, down on Otis either. I think he's shown flashes of being able to do great things as well. And so I would certainly take them over Gallows and Anderson if I was putting together my own promotion. Not that I would ever do such a crazy thing, but yeah, they're high on my list of underutilized talents. I think they're just a few tweaks away from being, you know, somebody who could a team that could really credibly compete in the tag division.
Javier.
You know, I think there was something that Graves said that made me think that and particularly with AJ Styles getting involved with Sami Zayn, that made me think that they might be an opponent for the Usos to just basically run through, kind of like how they're going to do with Hit Row.
Yeah. All right. Cool. Javier, good to talk to you again here on the post show.
Missed all last week. That's, I think, the first time in a while. But good talking to you again, and good talking to you, Jake. It feels like it's been forever, so.
Yeah, nice talking to you out here.
Excellent.
Good night, guys.
All right, cool. Yep, good night. Happy holidays. Jake, anything else you want to add about Rob before we sign off here?
No, I think we just about covered every segment. So I'm
Yeah, I feel good about it. Excellent. Well, thanks to our callers and emailers. Thanks to our listeners, of course, as always. Thanks, Jake. And we'll talk to everybody next time. Wednesday night will be the next live show.